guys, Steve Cook with Premier Guitar, premierguitar.com. I feel like I'm in the Fortress of Solitude right now with Jesse Keeler from DFA, Death From Above 1979. Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you? Put it there. Thanks for having us here, man. This is awesome. Right now, I'm in the inner circle, which with a two-piece band, this is the circle. And may the circle be unbroken. We're going to talk about your bass first over here.
Okay.
What do you got?
So for years, I played Rickenbacker. Mm-hmm. And people kind of gave me a hard time when I stopped playing the Rickenbacker. But the true story behind it was I'd wanted one of these, bought one, something broke the first time I played it. I took it back and the guy's like, well, you want this Rickenbacker? I'll straight trade you for it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I played it for years, but it wasn't my intention. This is a 1969 Dan Armstrong. I have three of them, and one of them that's not here, that serial number is only four apart from this one.
Wow.
This is my main one.
And they're all the same years, all three that you use?
That's a 71, but okay. The electronics are sort of a mess now. But this one I got from Chicago Music Exchange. I got a friend over there that's always looking for things that I want. So he found this one for me, and this pickup was actually made by Dan Armstrong's son, Kent.
Wow.
And I since reached out to him and got him to make me a few more for the rest of the bassist because I got so accustomed to it. This is just like the most life-changing bass for me.
So I
wasn't a bass player before this band.
Okay.
When we made our first record, I borrowed somebody's Squire jazz bass. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd played guitar, but you know, my needs were really simple. And then the more I played, the more I wanted to do more. And I found myself getting up to the top of the Rick or a Gibson Grabber, and I've had a bunch of different. And I'd get as high as I could go. I'm like, but I have ideas that continue
right
beyond that point. And so once we started working on songs for this record, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna get another Dan Armstrong and try it again. And it was just like a flood of creativity after I had it.
And that's kind of the sign of a great instrument, you know, one that feels good for people that are shopping for stuff is when it inspires like one did. You know?
It's weird too, because I mean, normally I like everything to be as bulletproof as I can have it. And this instrument just forced me to accept that that's not possible with it. So, I mean, there's a standard Rosewood bridge that I had to, my tech made me this one with the intonation carved into the wood.
So you can't mess up.
So as long as I use the same strings,
right,
it will be intonated properly.
Right.
Because keeping it in over the whole fretboard is hard. And I play so much up here. But I had it refretted and the neck shaped so it's as flat as it was going to get. And it's just a dream. Man, there's so much stuff that I can do on it that just, well, other than it being fret impossible on another bass.
Well, the short scale probably helps you coming from guitar. I mean, is it more natural? I mean,
well, it's weird because it where it sits was the first thing to kind of get accustomed to. And it's such a, like playing up here is more comfortable than playing down here.
Sure.
There's a lot of songs on a new record, like White is Red is up on the 24th fret.
Now your stuff is, I mean, grand, hard, soft, you know, runs the gamut, but are you hard on instruments?
I used to be a lot harder on instruments, but I can't be that hard on this.
Right, that's why I ask. This is a delicate baby.
When it's in, but this, the bridge design I'm not crazy about, and I'm hoping I can find something that will work
titanium.
Better. Or just I would like to be able to change the intonation string to string just to make sure that it's always right. But
sure. And what gauges are you using, do you know?
I've been using Ernie Ball regular slinkies forever.
Okay.
My tech at home in Toronto, he's always like, yeah, you can play lighter strings on this, or do you want to use something else? And he also told me I could have the action lower. I'm like, well, look at my hands, man. It's fine.
I got it.
Yeah, and I play a lot with my thumb.
Okay.
And I didn't notice I was doing that until very recently. when I'd hand my bass to someone else and they'd go to play the song, and I was like, why does it sound so like everything's ringing? What's going on? It's because I'm always muting with one hand or the other and just sort of isolating whatever the note is right that on. I want to actually play. But that's it. I mean, I couldn't recommend them more. If you're interested, if you feel like I guess I could have got a 5-string and gone one higher or something, but I really like being limited by 4 strings. I like limitations. I'm in a band with 2
sure.
people.
Sure.
But it's very enjoyable to play.
And the vintage stuff is meant to be played. You know, some guys lock them up and, you know, hang them on walls, and some guys play them. So it's always nice to see them on the road.
And I also think it's fine to modify the vintage stuff to the point where you want it to be. Now some guys are like, oh, you can't change anything. It's like, it's going to degrade, take away its value. It's like, but it's valueless to me if I can't use it.
Precisely. So precisely.
I don't care. As soon as I can find a replacement bridge, I will slap it on. Although I don't know how many times you can screw in and out of Lucite.
Well,
that's another, actually, if I'm talking about this instrument, another thing that's crazy is the sustain on this is nuts. Just because this is so solid.
Yeah.
In comparison to wood, it rings for as long as I want it to.
How deep is that pocket? It's this set. See, it's a little bit different than a normal jazz bass or, you know, P bass, whatever sits on top.
Oh, yeah, so no, dude, getting in here is pretty nice.
Spin that around so we can show him. Look at that, see? In case they don't know.
I had to, there's a thumb screw you can use to remove the pickup, but then that just gets caught in my pockets, so that's why there's a really cool piece of tape here.
It's stuck. There he is.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
Beautiful, though.
It's beautiful.
And I'll keep buying them as often as I can find them.
I'll keep an eye out for you. They come through Nashville a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people hate them, but I'm stuck.
Great.
Unless somebody wants to make a 24-fret bass, I don't have any options.
Right. Well, moving from bass, we're going to talk about your hissy gear. I said hissy. So I'm guessing, if I may guess, that this is an older PV head?
Yes.
Do you know what year?
I believe the circuit board says 71 or 72.
How long have you had it?
Well, just to start off, so that people who think they got to spend a lot of money on gear to get a rig, when I got this stuff initially, the sum total of all the gear on this stage, not including the basses, was about $300.
$300.
This head was $125. It was the sound of our band. I have only ever seen 2 other than this one. And if anyone has one and they'd like to sell it to me, I'll pay pretty much anything for these. So this is the sound of the band. This is the sound of my bass, is these amps. I don't use distortion pedals. It's just the amp distortion. And the way the distortion works on this is almost like, it's not like a distortion is being added. It's almost more like you're overdriving a compressor.
Okay.
It's just the square wave action happens. That's why some people are like, why you don't? There's almost no feedback unless you want it to be there. It's because it's this very controlled, insanely loud sound.
So what? Can you tell me the model?
It's called a Super Festival 800.
Okay.
This is the B for bass, and there was also a G for guitar, which had a couple other, couple slightly different controls, like a fuzz as opposed to just
the overdrive.
I've never had to turn it up past 1.5. It doesn't matter where I've been, doesn't matter stage size. At 1.5, I can drown out anything. I have driven, I drove 3 Ampeg 810 cabs with it one time, and I was still at the same volume. Actually, like, we were at playing Reading and Leeds. I think it was in Reading. There was all these SVT cabs that had been backlined.
Right.
With a 1/4-inch connection, you could chain them up. Like, hey, do you guys mind if I just for fun, plug? I had one, and then there was 2 more. This is before I could afford to bring my cabinets with me. And we just chained them all together. And I actually had 4 four Marshall 412s being driven by this guy. So this is, I can't really talk about one without the other. So sure. This is a, this is an acoustic 450B. I'm not really sure. I've read different things. I read that it was 600 watts of, you would think that the 450 would be telling you something.
Right, right.
Same thing, and though it's just, it's got a distortion in it, and that's it. I mean, the distortion on both these is cranked, and that's just what it sounds like. This one is more top and mid.
Okay.
This is doing it as well, but the mid on this is, it sounds more like a, more like Fender guitar mid, and this is more like Gibson guitar mid, if that,
that makes sense.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There's
absolutely.
Just a, like a slightly different curve and tone to it, but the two together, is it, one by itself doesn't sound right. I gotta have the two.
And what kind of cabinets are you on?
This is the funniest thing. So these cabinets are made by a company in Canada called Trainer, mm-hmm. that exists now, but this is, I think these are both 71s. I have two more at home. And the only original speaker is this one. I tried to replace them. I had a stagehands years ago dropped one on its back, and the whole thing was gone. This is the only guy left. And it's funny because I know my dad is friends with Pete Trainer, who designed these boxes. And I called him up when I needed to replace the speakers. I'm like, what did you use? And he said, well, they cost $5. And there was no difference between the guitar and bass speakers. They were just speakers.
What year was this?
This was, what, did I have that conversation?
Yeah.
I guess probably 2002.
Okay.
So, I mean, since our first record, there's been no, I mean, our first EP,
right.
No one's heard the original cabinets anymore.
Okay.
Then I had a creative amp tech said, you know, I know your sound. Why don't you try using PA speakers instead of bass or guitar speakers? So this cabinet is a weird mix of original that was like came with the box, of the closest approximation to the original that came with the box. I've got there's a couple PV guitar, like Delta speakers in here. This is an Eminence PA speaker. I think this might be as well. Yeah, that I think that is. This is probably the same family as that. I have one of my other cabs that is actually, it's funny that this one is here, because I have so many. And my techs were packing up to go on tour in Europe, and they just grabbed this one, and not one of the ones that I've redone.
You're supposed to, right?
So same box over here. But these are all Eminence,
okay.
PA speakers, and I.
Is that on purpose?
Yes, I fucking love them.
Okay.
Well, because I don't want it to just be low end. I find that when I'd use a bass cab, I wasn't getting the mid response that I wanted. I mean, you'll still get the top, but I wasn't getting that. The mid is my sound. These are perfect, and it sounds incredible, and we redid all the wiring. I have another cab that's entirely these PV Delta Blues 10s, mm-hmm. that's so nice with this, and that's the one that I would have liked to have on tour, but I have this here. I love them both, but it's sort of like, that guitar speaker works really well with this amp sound, and the PA speaker works really well with this amp sound. But it's got to be the combination of the two. I tried to run both amps with cabs full of these Eminence, and they're super awesome. But it was missing a little something that this, for whatever stupid reason, has. So,
well, now you've got three wedges in front of you. They can't see, but there's three wedges here. Is that your normal setup too? Do you normally have that?
Yeah, well, if I'm over on the keyboard, I want to still be able to hear him singing. And when I'm competing with the volume of this.
When I was going to ask, what do you have coming through your wedges? Because obviously you've got a wall of sound behind you. Or is it just...
So the funny thing is, I don't know how we became such a loud band, but I think at first Sebastian was playing trying to play as loud as my amps, and then it sort of just becomes like a race, and now we're just accustomed to being incredibly loud.
Right.
But I still like to hear kick and snare in his vocal, because there's no way I could hear his vocal over this.
For that.
And if I'm on a, if it's like a festival size stage, I'll actually, if the distance between the front of the stage and that cabinet is too great, I'll have a little, just a touch of that, of this, of the acoustic cab in the front, just okay. So, because I find it doesn't project this. There was actually a time when we were in Europe and they have dB levels. I mean, I guess clubs all over the place have dB levels.
Sure.
So there was a really funny moment where the promoter comes in. He's like, "You guys are over the, you're already way over the limit." It was 100. It was first. He said it was like 98 when my amps were just on.
Okay.
But then he was, I was way beyond their limit, and our front of house is like, that's not even in the PA yet. It was just. It was actually just this amp.
Still a 1.5.
That was on. Yeah. No, I haven't turned it up past 1.5.
That's what I'm saying. So it was still on 1.5. And yeah. Still
there's something kind of magic that happens right in there. If I go too much further, it's not getting any louder. It's just pushing the speakers harder. So it starts to be its own sort of compression.
Right. It's so squirrely.
It's just so fucking loud already.
It's awesome. And refreshing. Because, you know, not spending a lot of money wonderfully refreshing to see.
Because, I guess I should also say that the solid state, the reason why I gravitated towards solid state instead of tube amps is just for the attack. The attack is I noticeably faster, and so when I'm running through something quick, I like to feel that the very immediate reaction on every note, especially if it's like a fast run or whatnot. It just works out better for me. When we're recording Infused, I'll, you know, for an overdub, I'll throw in whatever weird combination of pedals and amps just to accent
what you have
this
going
sound.
On. Do you use these in the studio as well?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, this was the speaker that was mic'd on there, and I think this was the speaker that was mic'd.
That's awesome.
We had little signs that said record or record this
Record
one.
This guy.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, let's move from amps to pedals.
Okay.
I'm going to get punny for a second, talk about the elephant in the room. Sorry. So this is part of your signal chain as well.
Yes. So this is my Roland Juno 60, which was $275 when I bought it.
So we're talking about $585 right now. So running tally for everything. All right.
So, I mean, now this alone is so much money, but when I started buying synthesizers, they were not cool, so it was easy. You could just go in a pawn shop and buy a mint condition synth. I've never had this serviced, and it's still awesome, knock on wood paneling. So what I started to do at some point, and it ties into the pedal board, is I realized I could switch. I could either have the bass or the synth still go through the amps. So it's a super simple patch that I tried to sort of simulate the tone of the bass, but then allow me to play a keyboard, and I just switch one between one and the other, so that in terms of I guess most of this is about that. Initially, the only pedal I had was this Morley AB pedal, so I got some nice zip tie here to
keep me
from screwing it up and turning them both on and losing gain on both. But I just switch between one and the other, so A is my bass and B is the synth, and it's one or the other goes to the amps, and that's it. I mean, I've had some people say, "Oh, I can't believe the synth sounds just like the bass." I'm like, "Well, it's going through the same thing." And I mean, no, the amps through different cabs don't sound like that. This is just a big combination of things. And I guess probably the most important thing in my setup was something that I did by accident. So when we started working on this band, or when I had the idea to set up like this, I was trying to figure out how do I split the signal, and I didn't have a quarter inch mono splitter.
Okay.
But I had this Ibanez Stereo Chorus. I'm like, God, stereo, I've never actually used the other output. What if I send the other output to the other amp and use this as my split? And then over time, I've got this the speed and the width settings just so. So my signal was always just going between the amps to give it, to make it even bigger. But that's this, I mean, originally the setup was just this pedal and the amps. And then I introduced the keyboard, so I needed this.
Okay.
And these are still the things that I had when we started, still running. I can't believe this thing still works.
Knock on something.
Yeah.
So you're coming into the wah first, right?
Yeah. So okay. the guitar signal goes into the wah,
right.
And then from the wah, I think it goes. My tech Bernie could. We've screwed with it a bunch of times. It goes from the wah to the delay, mm-hmm. and then from the delay to the AB box. And then from the AB box, actually, there's a state. It goes from the wah.
Hold on.
There's two. I'm okay. Like, I started looking around. I'm like, oh, there's other stuff. So yes, guitar signal comes into the wah. It goes from the wah to, I think, this DI. And the DI is. I'm using this MXR DI because it has EQ on it, so okay. I'm only sending low, and in the house, the front of house just uses this as a sub, so that way doesn't have to worry about getting low end from these. I mean,
okay.
You heard there's a fair bit of low end,
sure,
but to get that extra sub, that's what the DI
for. Now this DI does have dirt on it, but you don't use any of the dirt.
Yeah, I thought maybe it would work. For that, but I didn't. I think there's enough dirt on the stage already. So yeah, this is just to send the sub signal out.
Okay.
So then, escaping from there, this is a funny thing that I didn't need in any other bass. So I'm using this MXR EQ, giving myself a little bit more mid, lowering the, cutting the 30 hertz a bit because I don't want. I've already got my sub here. I don't need to send
your rumble.
I don't want to lose. Lose response because I'm sending so much sub into the amps. But this is the funniest thing, I have the gain all the way down.
I'm sure you can see this, but look at this setting. I mean, nobody, I mean, not...
I turned it down?
No, yeah, everybody says, hey, I want it to sound like this, so I'm going to turn it up. And you've done the exact opposite, which is awesome. I mean, again, the whole thing's
If you send too much signal into these amps, you start to lose more information than you're gaining.
Okay.
And I don't need any more distortion. And I happened upon it once I had that bass, that pickup is so ridiculously hot. I was like, what is wrong with something? Something didn't feel right. And then I just gradually bringing the gain down, down, down. And that, as you hear it now anyway.
So we go through these things.
So from this, I guess we go into the delay. The delay is only on the, I only have it on the guitar, not on the keyboard. And then from the delay, we get into the AB box. Keyboard just goes straight into the B. It doesn't need this. And then from the mix of the AB, we go, that's my input on the stereo chorus that sends out to the two amps.
Okay.
The main out goes directly into the PV. And the stereo out then goes through this micro pog,
mm-hmm.
and then through this, I wish that they would make it again, this Q-Zone pedal. And this is the hilarious Kerry fucking King version. Which my tech wants to change this K to a J, so it'll be JFK, like
sure.
me. And the great paint job.
That Why is it really, so special to you?
Well,
how does that pedal talk to you, Jesse?
This fix, it's a fixed wah. That's it, right? Like, except you have, the filter and also the Q, so you can. I just when I want to cut even more, I don't want to just mess with the overall sound so
sure.
much. This, I only use one of the other at a time, never both.
Okay.
But it's only going on this amp, which is already the mid amp, but then I get into this, and the sound of our song Trainwreck is this on the whole time.
just it cuts even further. It sort of almost gives it like a Brian May-esque like
shift on it, because a lot yeah. I mean a lot of wahs they get really honky, they get really yeah, you know, having, weird on you.
Having the peak control really allows you to shape it so that it doesn't get I just want it to sound very narrow at times, and that's what I do with that. And then this guy, I mean, if everyone knows what a pog does,
sure.
I have the dry out all the way up, the sub off, octave off, because I don't need a sub octave. and then I have about 3/4 of the way up on the octave up, and it's just sometimes I'll, I mean, I use these very seldom. I use this even less. But if I want just that extra top to have an octave up, if I'm going down, and or if it's just, you know, to just elevate the moment in a song or whatever,
that's the one.
That guy does it. Yeah, I mean, there's no analog octave up that's going to track that way, and so I have to accept a little bit of digital sound, but then it's only on one amp, so it's I think I feel like it means more than if I had it on both, which I tried initially and I didn't like it. Doing too much, but having it just on the one really works. And you know, this is a wah pedal. You know what a wah pedal does.
Sure.
It's super exciting.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know how I got it. I have a pile of wah pedals somewhere in my house. that one is the one that broke the least. So, good work, Ernie Ball. Oh, that's right. They discontinued it as well.
Oh.
These two guys.
So you're in the market. You're in the market for some gear, if anybody has some.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always looking at pedals, and I tried and using, when we were recording, I tried all kinds of different things. But in the end, there's some things that never change.
So do you get out, like on the road, do you get out and check out shops and pawn shops?
Yeah, I try. I mean, this took one of my techs actually found this for me, because I gave up looking. I couldn't find one, and it had been discontinued. But I'd used it so much on the record, and I know so many people use them.
Right.
So many people who have similar love of mid. I know, like Troy from Queens has still got his original Q-Zone. It's awesome. It's sort of an annoying sound by itself, but in the context of this, and only having it on one of the two amps, is just, for me, it's perfect.
Right.
Screams.
Well, thank you. This has been fantastic. You have opened the door, and we appreciate that a lot. And you guys at home, you didn't get a chance to hear it, and I don't think you'll be able to hear it through these mics, but he fired this up, and this is Wall of Death over here. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your time to get you, and have a great tour. Thank you so much for taking time with us today. We'll see you soon for Premier Guitar, premierguitar.com. Steve Cook, Jesse Keeler, signing off. Thank you.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.